Eclipse Aviation responds to the NTSB. Boeing starts powering up the first Dreamliner. But how many Dreamliner customers will still be standing a year from now? This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Monday, June 16, 2008. On Friday, Eclipse Aviation responded to urgent recommendations from the NTSB and an emergency airworthiness directive from the FAA by calling the board's recommendations premature. The AD called for inspections and, if needed, repairs or replacements to throttle controls on the Eclipse 500 Very Light Jet and called for a supplement to be added to the emergency procedures portion of the aircraft flight manual to cover simultaneous failure of the throttle controls on both engines. Eclipse says all fleet operators of the Very Light Jet had already complied with the AD and that those planes are in the air and operating normally. The company says the AD requires a pilot inspection of the thrust quadrant assembly on each Eclipse 500 in advance of the aircraft's next flight, not that any plane in the Eclipse 500 fleet be grounded. Eclipse has also updated the 500's flight manual and quick reference handbook. NTSB Chairman Mark Rossanker Friday didn't mention the company's action, but applauded the FAA's fast response in issuing the emergency AD, saying it could save lives. Eclipse Aviation President and CEO Vern Rayburn discusses the issue in today's Aero News special feature. Well, it's a year late, but nevertheless a major step toward the first flight of Boeing's 787 Dreamliner. On Wednesday, Boeing flipped the first switch, sending electrical power to the composite-bodied aircraft. The plane maker expects to have the aircraft fully powered on by the end of the month. Boeing spokeswoman Yvonne Leach told Reuters, quote, "It gives us confidence that we'll have that milestone completed by the end of the month," unquote. As ANN reported, Boeing debuted the first 787 in a flashy public ceremony last July. But at that time, the plane was little more than a cobbled-together shell with few major systems installed. Customers and pundits alike questioned whether Boeing would be able to meet its ambitious schedule to begin customer deliveries in May of this year. Well, Boeing dismissed the concerns at the time, but in the end, even the naysayers proved optimistic. Supplier issues, a shortage of specialized fasteners, and problems integrating the plane's many complex subsystems delayed the Dreamliner not 6 months, but about a year. Boeing now says the 787's first flight will happen by the end of this year, and adds the new schedule is sandbagged to provide some breathing room. Ground testing will begin soon after full power on is accomplished. Boeing's Dreamliner became the fastest-selling new airliner in history, partly because of its fuel efficiency. Unfortunately, the same relentless rise in fuel costs, which is making the aircraft popular, is threatening the very existence of its customers. According to a study issued Thursday by Airline Forecasts LLC and the Business Travel Coalition, several large and small U.S. airlines will default on their obligations to creditors beginning late this year. The study shows that $130 per barrel oil will increase yearly airline costs by $30 billion, but the airlines will be able to generate only $4 billion in fare increases and incremental fees. The implication is that several large and small airlines will end up in bankruptcy and some will be forced to liquidate. As the study puts it, quote, "If oil prices stay anywhere near $130 per barrel, all major legacy airlines will be in default on various debt covenants by the end of 2008 or early 2009. With airlines gravely threatened, so is our economic well-being," unquote. Several U.S. carriers have already announced aggressive capacity cuts starting later this year. You can find more detail on this story at aero-news.net. The Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association told ANN Friday Craig Spence is coming aboard to fill the newly created position of VP of Aviation Security. Spence is a longtime general aviation pilot who spent most of his career in airport and aviation security. AOPA says he'll bring that GA sensibility along with security savvy to his new role. AOPA Executive VP for Governmental Affairs Andy Sabula says, quote, "Bringing Craig on board means that we have someone who understands both the needs of our members and the ways of the security agencies," unquote. Spence comments, quote, "I've been involved in general aviation since I first went flying with my father at about age one. I've been a member of AOPA since the 1980s, and I've spent nearly 20 years in airport and aviation security. So I'm looking forward to working to find answers that impose the least possible burden on AOPA members while still addressing the nation's security needs," unquote. Spence's last position was as program manager for geospatial and aerospace systems in the Department of Homeland Security's Office of Operations Coordination. He's also served as the briefer for Assistant Secretary for Transportation Security Kip Hawley, and prior to joining TSA, was the security coordinator for a major air carrier hub airport. He's a colonel in the United States Air Force Reserve and holds a commercial pilot certificate with instrument and multi-engine ratings and has more than 2,500 military flight hours in large, turbine-powered multi-engine aircraft. Coming up next on ANN, Discovery completes its mission without drama. United's shareholder meeting features plenty of drama, and Myrtle Beach International wants to spend now, get approval later. You're listening to Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC-700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft merges the most advanced technologies from the fields of hearing science, aviation communications, and performance audio. Clarity Aloft headsets use Comply canal tips composed of soft, viscoelastic foam, the same foam tips used in advanced hearing aids. The noise-canceling microphone is optimized for speech frequencies in high-noise environments. The low-profile headband is featherweight and comfortable. Just three reasons why you need to feel and hear the difference a Clarity Aloft stereo headset can make for you. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headsets on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for June 16th, 2008. I'm Paul Plack. Right on time at 11:15 Eastern Saturday morning, the Space Shuttle Discovery landed on runway 15 at the shuttle landing facility near Kennedy Space Center in Florida. The orbiter re-entered Earth's atmosphere over the Indian Ocean. Tracking northeast over Cancun and just west of Cuba, the shuttle became visible from ground level as it crossed into the United States just over Naples, Florida. The STS-124 crew delivered the Japanese pressurized module and brought Greg Kamatov to join the station's Expedition 17 crew, replacing fellow American Garrett Reisman, who caught a ride home on Discovery. The next shuttle mission is STS-125. The launch is scheduled for October 8th. Atlantis will make the last visit by a shuttle to the Hubble Space Telescope before the shuttle fleet retires in 2010. A groundbreaking for the new terminal at Myrtle Beach International Airport in South Carolina Friday may have been a little premature. WPDE Television reports critics are raising concerns over spending taxpayer money before any crucial approvals are received. As ANN reported last year, the FAA asked for the return of $7 million already granted after the airport's passenger terminal plan went down in a storm of political squabbling. The FAA had originally awarded $17.4 million to the project for site clearing and design, but then the Myrtle Beach Community Appearance Board rejected the terminal plan in April of 2007. At the groundbreaking on Friday, officials announced the state will spend $3 million on the project, two-thirds coming directly from the state budget, the rest coming from the State Division of Aeronautics. Local pilot Doug Decker told WPDE the revised project has not been approved yet by the Appearance Board, has not been bid yet, and lacks a building permit. Decker also claims the project is already 50% more expensive than similar projects at other airports. He also points out that a groundbreaking was already held for the $250 million terminal planned for the west side of the airport, which ended up not being built. Airport officials remain undaunted and say if construction begins soon, it could be complete by late next year. If you've been following the stock prices of major U.S. airlines, you may have wondered why the stockholders aren't gathering with torches and pitchforks by now. Well, by all reports, Thursday's shareholder meeting at United came close to that. The Associated Press reports nearly 115 uniformed United employees were crowded into the conference room as shareholders re-elected United's board of directors on Thursday. Among the outbursts aimed at CEO Glenn Tilton was a comment, quote, "You continue to be compensated for failure," unquote. When Tilton ended his prepared remarks with a statement of, quote, "a renewed commitment to all of our stockholders," unquote, one female employee shouted, quote, "Prove it. Give up your bonuses and your pay. Prove it," unquote. Tilton reportedly remained cool, but not everyone did. AP says others on both sides of the podium took heated jabs at him and at each other. A proposal to allow shareholders to vote on executive compensation failed with just 21% of the vote. Workers lined up in the back of the conference hall to ask the directors questions and to air their beefs directly to Tilton. One worker told the CEO of a funeral for a United worker who reportedly committed suicide due to stresses of the job. A frequent flyer and shareholder said United needs to focus less on in-flight amenities and more on keeping its workers happy. Jose Moreno, a captain for the airline, pointed out to Tilton that Continental Airlines CEO Larry Kellner declined to take his salary for the rest of the year in a show of solidarity with embattled airline workers. Tilton responded that United executives need to be paid competitive salaries to keep them from moving to industries with more positive outlooks. He added, quote, "Someday one of you ought to come up and stand here," unquote. The comment apparently did not elicit the desired response. Several people quickly volunteered. Nine survivors of the crash of a Patagonia Airlines Cessna 208 in Chile say they discussed cannibalism to survive during 5 days in freezing temperatures waiting to be rescued. The Guardian reports the turboprop was 10 minutes from landing in the village of La Junta when it hit a mountain near the Argentine border June 7th. Passenger Jose Miguel Almonacid told the paper, quote, "We were flying in very bad conditions. There was rain and sleet. Suddenly we went into a cloud, and when we came out, we were in front of the mountain. I managed to scream, 'Watch out,' when I heard the explosion," unquote. All 10 people on board survived the impact, but pilot Nelson Bahamondes died 2 days later from blood loss. The group had a limited supply of food and no apparent prospects for rescue. With supplies dwindling, discussion turned to whether the group should eat the pilot. Rescue crews located the survivors on Wednesday. None had serious injuries, but four were taken to Puerto Raul Marin to be checked out by doctors. Still ahead, barnstormers are back. Cirrus Design opens its first sales center in Greece. And a deal to save Silverjet collapses. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-Cessna.
Shoot happens. Come on, you know it does. Even the world's top test pilots know there are in-flight situations you can't always recover from. Mid-air collision, control failure, pilot incapacitation. In severe emergencies, do what the world's top test pilots do. Use a parachute. Except, instead of having to bail out of a moving aircraft, you can have the safety of a BRS full airframe recovery parachute. BRS has parachutes for an enormous variety of aircraft, from experimental to light sport, and all the way to retrofits on certified airplanes. Shoot happens. Will you be ready when it does? Call BRS today at 651-457-8651 or visit us online at brsparachutes.com.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Monday, June 16th, 2008. I'm Paul Plack. The American Barnstormers Tour kicked off Sunday in Ames, Iowa, seeking to recreate the excitement of an era when eager pilots crisscrossed the nation after World War I in search of fame and glory by blowing into small towns. Tour organizer Clay Porkchop Adams recalls, quote, "Airplanes were new and people were fascinated with them. It became a way for a lot of these people to make a living," unquote. The tour, which runs through the end of the month, features many of the same aircraft that took center stage in the 1920s. The tour aims to visit nine cities over 15 days. The Iowa City kickoff had been delayed by flooding in the area. In addition to close-up static displays, each afternoon the aircraft will take to the skies for Barnstormers Parade of Flight. Biplane rides will be for sale daily, weather permitting. You can find the full tour schedule in the text version of this story at aero-news.net. On Friday, Cirrus Design announced the opening of Cirrus Greece, the first Cirrus sales center in that country. The sales center will be based in Athens, and Cirrus aircraft will soon be available for product demos and transition training. Initially, neighboring Cirrus service centers will provide maintenance for customers, but a local service center is promised soon. To promote the introduction of Cirrus Greece, the center participated in Icarus 2008, the General Aviation Exhibition of Southern Europe, over the weekend. Cirrus International is part of Cirrus Design and plans to continue its rapid expansion through 2008 and beyond. Regulatory complications are being blamed for the collapse of a deal to revive Silverjet, an all-business class airline based in England. As we told you last week, Silverjet received an offer June 10th from King Place. That's an Ireland-based investment company managed by Geneva-based management company Heritage CSA. They wanted to buy and relaunch the airline. At the time, King Place had hoped to have the airline flying again within weeks and retain its entire staff. But the UK's Civil Aviation Authority required King Place to prove it could provide more than £25 million of funding for the airline. That's equivalent to $50 million US over the next 6 months. Receivership rules in the UK also require that employees be released within 2 weeks of bankruptcy filing, unless a buyer can be found. The acquisition talks broke down on Friday. The Irish Times reports all 420 workers at Silverjet have now been laid off, and the next step will likely be liquidation to pay employee back wages first and creditors if there's anything left. Silverjet was said to be losing £1 million a month in 2007, and that number is thought to have doubled recently. The company has assets including its name, contracts on aircraft, and departure lounges. And finally, Dennis Kenyon has been involved in helicopter flight instruction and sales in southern England since the early 1970s. The former RAF squadron leader has also wowed airshow crowds with his displays and won a number of aerobatic titles. Recently, his efforts have shifted toward raising money to help subsidize helicopter flight training for youth. His DVD, The Helicopter Experience, sells for $35 on his website, with proceeds going to fund those student scholarships. Dennis said he planned to retire within the next year and hoped to pull off what he called a major stunt first. Well, now he's not so sure. On Friday, at an informal demo at a rotorcraft meet in Fairfield, Utah, his attempted wingover in a borrowed Schweitzer 269C ran out of altitude on the roundout, and the helo was destroyed as it slammed into the dirt, struck its rotor on the ground, and flipped. Dennis required a few stitches but was not seriously injured. I was there watching it, and I still don't know how he walked away from what was left of that machine. We all ran over to see if we could help as the dust was clearing. The first thing I heard him say after crawling out and regaining his feet was, quote, "I feel stupid," unquote. I guess that beats the alternative. It's not clear whether it was jet lag from the pilot's Thursday flight from England, a warm day at 4,900 feet, or an unpredictable thermal, but Kenyon says the accident was the first of his 36-year career and followed 1,213 incident-free performances. Some of the more superstitious in the crowd noted he lifted off at 1,300 local time on Friday the 13th. The FAA had its initial investigation completed and the airport open again by 1,600 local time, but nobody felt much like flying until the next day. Dennis didn't make it back to the meet on Saturday, but reportedly toured the Hill Air Force Base Museum with some friends, complaining only of a stiff back. I'm hoping to get a few words with him after he gets home to England this week and see if he's reconsidering his plans for the future. Listen for that on the Aero News special feature. And pick up his DVD if you're interested in seeing some great historic footage and helicopter exhibition flight. You'll also be helping a young kid somewhere learn to fly. And that's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, ANN's Jim Campbell discusses last week's controversy over throttle controls on the Eclipse 500 with company CEO Vern Rayburn. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.